Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
It was embarrassing. I thought that was embarrassing.
And the dogs are tied to people who are on skis.
It's graffiti, I guess, but with knit fabric.
It's easy to understand it in your head. It's a different thing to try to bring it to your dinner table and explain it to your family and go, this is something I'm really keen on.
Radio never sounded so good. From the studios of KUOM Radio K, this is Culture Cube, the arts show that rocks. Tickets are free, and there's no wait, so take a seat and hold on to your radio. Good evening and a very happy Mother's Day. Thanks for tuning in. I'm your host, Krista Deborini. What do a master wig maker, hot new music have in common? No, it's not Lady Gaga, but you'll find all these fascinating characters on Culture Q. We have a rich lineup of the best in arts and culture coverage, so stick around and grab your mom. She might just enjoy this too.
Let's all get up and dance to a song that was a hit before your mother was born. Though she was born a long, long time ago, your mother should know.
As we venture deeper into the 21st century, the impact of technology becomes evident in all parts of our lives. From a musical perspective, recording techniques, improved instrumentation, and access to a global audience make having your voice heard easier than ever. In a recent performance by We Can and We Must, Todd Crotty experienced firsthand what an impact technology can have on popular music.
Do not attempt to adjust your radio dial. The audio you're hearing is from a recent live performance from the electronic duo We Can and We Must. Comprised of Ryan Ingbritson and Jason Wampler, We Can and We Must combines original and popular music with audio recording and playback equipment create a futuristic sound in a way few others have.
The idea of being a musician radically changed suddenly in the last couple of decades. Today, to be a music maker, especially doing the style that we're doing, blending acoustic sounds and electric sounds and blending preconceived ideas along with improvised ideas, it's, I guess, a sign of the times. It's difficult not to let everything around us influence us because it's all available to us now.
Longtime friends and bandmates now living across the globe from one another, We Can and We Must finds ways to take their music to new heights in virtually every way possible. Minnesota native Ryan Ingbritson explains the technique used to create this one-of-a-kind sound.
There are two samples, and one of them is the beginning of a Herbie Hancock song, actually. And then the other sample is actually a Mozart piano piece. And we basically, one of us is manipulating one sample, the other of us is manipulating the other sample, and then I'm playing bass. As the piece progresses, eventually I stop playing bass, I start manipulating samples, he starts manipulating samples. The music becomes more electronic sounding at that point. We kind of use this as our platform to explore the way different genres fit together and the way you can take, you know, more traditional sounding musics and then put them together in different ways in the electronic realm and make something completely brand new out of them.
We Can and We Must, who have been performing together since 2003, have created a global fan base, not only through their innovative use of technology when creating their music, but also in the theatrics they incorporate in their live performances, making the listener's experience one of mind and body.
In a live setting, I guess our objective or our hope is that the audience would feel as though they're being taken on a journey with two people who are placing their histories and their personalities and their ideas just on the table for you to see kind of nakedly. Jokingly, we say that, you know, we want to lead the people into a new age. time and space have no meaning, and where they are kind of transported by the music into a new state of mind.
As musicians, their traditional upbringings have played a major role in the music they create today. For Ryan Ingbritsen, taking the music one step further has opened the door to a world of music newly discovered.
We Can and We Must was like, it was like a place where I actually found my relationship with technology and became comfortable with it, in that I finally realized that there's a way to make electronics performative. You know, I liked that I could go beyond what the limitation of an instrument was. We Can and We Must is where we both discovered this way of making electronics come alive.
Having seen We Can and We Must perform live, I can tell you it's an experience I will not soon forget. Ryan and Jason seem to have a understanding of what it takes to make a live performance something special. Jason Wampler explains.
So one of our goals from the very beginning has been in a live performance setting to actually be performing and not just playing back things that we had done before, but to make it very clear to the audience that they're seeing something kind of composed or improvised right in front of them.
For Culture Q, I'm Todd Crotty.
As we college students hurtle through the home stretch of finals, we can't help but pine for those summer days of freedom. New Culture Q reporter Brianna Hansen asked University of Minnesota students what are they most excited for this summer.
Hey, mama, ooh. Hey, mama, ooh.
Enjoying the sunshine and just relaxing?
Well, I just got a job actually at the Guthrie, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm in the BFA program, the acting program, and it's rare to graduate and do main stages at the Guthrie, so yeah.
Kind of hard to follow right there, but I'm excited to go home and work with some inner city youth doing theater work and integration artwork. So yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to.
I have no idea, to be honest. Just the summer in general, the weather is pretty nice. I like walking around barefoot a lot, so that's something I'll probably be doing a lot of. No more papers and homework.
I'm just trying to sleep and catch up until summer break.
You know, maybe hanging out with my friends.
Just to chill and relax, I guess.
I'm graduating, so I don't have a break. I go to work.
I'd have to go with relaxing also. It's a good time.
I'm going to Canada to stay with some friends for the summer, so looking forward to that.
I can go back to my home and then enjoy my holiday with my friends. And also, maybe I will get some internship.
Sure, I will come back to China to spend almost a summer vacation with my family. Maybe go travel and maybe summer school. I'm not sure.
I'm most looking forward to living in Minnesota because I'm from South Dakota, so this will be my first summer having a lot of lakes around, so I'm excited to go to those and just spend some time on the beach.
All right, I guess what I'm excited about is that I work at this bike shop in the summer, and right now I'm only doing the weekends, which are no fun, but then I'll get to go back during the week, and it will be great, so I'm excited about that.
I'm excited for television marathons on the couch with my dog, and also I'm planning on going to Lollapalooza.
She's going to watch The Vampire Diaries so that we can be friends next year.
No. We're not going to be friends next year.
Want some whiskey in your water, sugar in your tea? What's all these crazy questions they're asking me? This is the craziest party that could. Don't turn on the lights, cause I don't wanna see. Mama told me not to come. Mama told me not to come. That ain't the way that I'm about to go.
Good evening, you're listening to Radio K's Culture Q, and I'm your host, Christetta Barini, and I'm joined in the studio today by Markita Fornoff.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And today we are talking about the top 7 procrastination techniques for this year's finals.
And of course, this is a really appropriate topic for college because there's just something about this environment that makes it so conducive to procrastinating.
There's just so much to do, even more than high school days.
Mm-hmm. And that's why we pay them the big bucks.
So, Marquita, what is our number 7 procrastination technique during finals?
Our number 7 is what we like to refer to as internetting. So basically, the act of checking up on Facebook, YouTube, etc., in order to avoid your homework.
Yeah, it plagues everyone these days. So what's our number 6 procrastination technique?
Pretending to multitask.
So how does that work?
Well, when I do this technique, I tend to open up a ton of tabs on my internet, have like 5 or 6 Word documents open, and just have books spread out all around me so that when people come into my room and want to chat, I look really, really busy.
But you're not actually in any way.
No, there's no way I can do all that.
Great. So what's our number 5 procrastination technique?
Reading things that are unrelated to our studies.
For example?
My favorite is to go on the BBC website and read about news from all over the world before checking on my homework at all.
And of course, that doesn't help you with finals whatsoever.
No, I mean, it's important to be aware of what's going on in the world, but there are just some festivals in Sweden that are really, really interesting, but they're not going to help me out with my final.
Perfect. So what is our number 4 procrastination technique?
This one is probably one of my favorites. It's eating. Because we all know that's a chore.
Yeah, it's got to get done. Mm-hmm. And everybody's got their favorite snack to have while they're studying. And you just, sometimes you got to go to UDS or make dinner, or it's the worst when you start to bake.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you have to look up the recipe. Then, you know, you don't have all the ingredients. Got to go shopping. And then by the time you get everything mixed together and in the oven, you've just lost it.
Yeah. You're never going to go back. So how about our number 3 procrastination technique for finals?
It is any and all household chores.
Like what?
Laundry, dishes, dusting, vacuuming, organizing your old CDs, sifting through paper, sifting through the recycling bin after you've already sorted it.
Any menial task just to avoid the homework.
Yeah, this is a key time for people to categorize things.
Okay, so what is our number 2 favorite procrastination technique for finals?
Napping.
Napping. How does napping help?
Well, we all know that you can't read a book when you're falling half asleep, so you might as well just take a nap, and then you'll be refreshed and ready for your studies.
Perfectly refreshed. I have a friend. She writes napping on her to-do list just so she can cross it off and still feel productive.
Yeah, I think I'm going to steal that idea, but just alternate all of my real tasks with napping.
Well, you'll be super productive then,
Marquita. Twice as productive.
Okay, so what is our number 1 procrastination technique for this year's finals?
Well, this is one I actually used last night, and it is calling family members.
And how does that help you out with your finals procrastination?
Well, we all know how important family is to help us get through this stressful time. And we also all know how talkative our great aunt is. So, of course, when you call, you have to be prepared to talk about her pets, her kids, the weather, her garden, you know.
You're being a good family member in doing that. And that's more important than your calculus grade.
Exactly. It's all about being selfless here and realizing, you know, looking at things on the larger scheme of things, you know.
Yeah.
Thinking about big picture.
Well, thank you for joining me today, Marquita.
Thank you for having me.
And those were your top 7 finals procrastination techniques. You're listening to
Our stepmom, we did everything to hate her. She took us down to the edge of Decatur. We saw the lion and the kangaroo take her down to the river where they caught a wild alligator.
The last time you went to the theater, did you stop to think about how much work goes into putting on something so spectacular? Chances are you didn't. With Minneapolis's lush theater scene, there are a lot of people who are involved with making a show happen. Monica Castleman takes a look at a very hairy aspect of the theater scene.
The show must go on, but what does it take to make that happen? Set design, costumes, and makeup are all important aspects of theater. The people that work on these parts of theater set the stage for the entire show. I recently sat down with Andrea Moriarty, who does wigs, hair, and makeup for the Guthrie Theater and the Minnesota Opera. She also teaches at Anoka Ramsey Community College.
I am an opera singer.
Andrea shared a little bit about the wig designing process with me.
At the Guthrie, costume designers design the wigs, and then the wig shop builds them. At the Minnesota Opera, our wigs are rented, so the wig designers who own the wig stock, they get the wigs up and they collaborate closely with the costume designer. If I'm hired to do a freelance wig, then I'm the designer or I collaborate closely with the costume designer.
Once the collaboration has taken place, it's time to get the wig started. And to do that, you have to have the most important element of the wig. The hair.
A lot of hair comes from the Middle East, or a lot of it is Asian hair that is processed, that's lightened, and then colored. Gray hair is actually the rarest color, and then reds, and then blondes.
After the right hair has been acquired, the wig actually has to be assembled. This is done by tying the hair to a lace cap using very small knots.
It's quite frustrating to learn how to tie a knot. My students that I taught at the University of Minnesota could attest to that. But once you get the hang of it, it's similar to crocheting or knitting, and you're able to do it quite quickly and effortlessly.
Wig making can be fairly time-consuming. It takes up to 40 hours to create a fully hand-tied wig. When you spend that much time on something, you're bound to have some wigs that you like more than others.
I really enjoyed making the wig for Rita Gardner when I was the wig master at Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park, and that was for our production of Murderers. She was playing an older woman, so I had to create a short-haired little gray wig for her, and she looked really adorable. She wanted to purchase it, but our costume shop manager loved the wig even more than she did, so he didn't really want to sell it to her.
What Moriarty does isn't always easy. Like with so many other professions, there are times when the situation calls for a little extra work than usual.
I had a challenging situation when I was the assistant wig and makeup master at the Cincinnati Opera. We had a female chorister who had dreaded extensions and very long hair, and we couldn't fit it underneath a wig. So I had to piece together 3 different wigs to create a wig that was large enough to fit over all of her hair.
Now that you've heard what a wig maker does, you might be wondering what it takes to become one. Andrea Moriarty started out in cosmetology here in the Twin Cities and got further training on wig and makeup design at the University of Cincinnati. It turns out that stage managers prefer that their wig and makeup workers have a background like Moriarty's.
I use all of my cosmetology skills in addition to all of the makeup training that I learned at the University of Cincinnati every day.
With
Marianne Elliott
Said, I'm Monica Castle.
Better known as Polystyrene of the UK punk pioneers X-Ray Specs, lost her battle with cancer on April 25th. But she leaves behind her a rich legacy of genre-defying music with a defiantly anti-consumerist message. Music reporter Zach McCormick brings the story of one of rock's greatest rebels.
Some people think little girls should be seen and not heard, but I think... Oh, bondage! Up yours! 1, 2, 3, 4!
While she'd later claim that the song was more anti-consumer than pro-feminist, with that count off, polystyrene broke the doors wide open for a generation of women rockers who weren't interested in playing nice and looking pretty for the boys. As the singer and songwriter from one of the first wave of British punk's brightest upstarts, the X-Ray Specs, Polly grafted a defiant message to a confrontational image and one of the most powerful voices to ever grace the gob-covered stage. Born Marianne Elliott Said to a British secretary and a dispossessed Somali aristocrat and raised in the West Indian community of Brixton, London, the young Polly was always something of a wild child, running away from home at 15 to hitchhike around the country's music festival circuit. Calling it a challenge in survival, her journey through England's hippie crash pads ended abruptly when she stepped on a rusted nail while bathing in a stream and was forced to return home because of the infection.
I dare Mrs. Smith.
In 1975, at just 16 years old, Marianne recorded her first single with producer Ted Bunting, and the novelty reggae 7-inch Silly Billy was released the following year and credited to Marie Elliott.
This Billy, oh Billy, no Billy.
Later that year, like so many UK punk pioneers, Polly had a life-changing moment watching the Sex Pistols perform, in this case playing a sloppy set of covers to a nearly empty hall, and was moved to start a band of her own. Placing an ad in the paper for young punks who want to stick together, she soon found herself fronting a group of scrappy young players calling themselves the X-Ray Specs, including saxophonist Lara Logic, who helped define the band's unique sound. The Specs quickly became one of the most talked about bands in the nascent UK punk scene, thanks in no small part to Styrene's memorable voice and her even more distinctive appearance. Proudly sporting thick braces on her teeth and a ragtag day-glow wardrobe, Polly was adamant that she be recognized as a rocker first and a woman later. Defiantly claiming, "I'm not a sex symbol, and if anyone tries to make me one, I'll shave my head tomorrow," a promise she would eventually make good on. Styrene led the Specs on a meteoric rise, playing several shows at the legendary punk club The Roxy before the band was even 3 months old, with such legends as The Buzzcocks and Wire. As bootlegs of these early concerts started to circulate, the band began to gig in earnest, doing weekly shows to enthusiastic crowds in London pubs friendly to the punk movement. A studio version of Oh Bondage Up Yours was released in 1977, and to this day is still seen as a defiant riot girl catchphrase 20 years before that term was even coined. Despite the departure of Lara Logic, the X-Ray Specs' 1978 debut, Germ-Free Adolescence, contained all the skronking sacks of the group's earlier material, with challenging anti-capitalist lyrics courtesy of Styrene. X-Ray Specs landed several more high-profile gigs, including a spot on John Peel's show for BBC One, a week-long residency at NYC punk club CBGB's, and in April 1978, the band joined The Clash, Steel Pulse, and a host of other punk bands to play for a crowd of over 100,000 activists at the Rock Against Racism Festival. The stress of touring very quickly became nearly unbearable for Polly, however, and after one fateful show, she began to fear she was hallucinating and was taken to the hospital by her mother, where she was misdiagnosed with schizophrenia and involuntarily committed to a mental institution. While it cut the career of her band tragically short, Styrene would later claim that getting out of the public eye was good for her, especially in light of her 1991 diagnosis with bipolar disorder. Polly Polystyrene would release a solo album in 1980 that featured a much mellower, jazz-influenced sound and joined the British Hare Krishna movement for several years. New Age experimentation would dominate most of her later years, although Polly would release an unexpected swan song in March 2011 in the form of her album Generation Indigo, which paired tongue-in-cheek satire with modern R&B beats. Unfortunately, the album followed news of Styrene's battle with breast cancer, and Polystyrene's life was cut tragically short less than a month later. She is survived by her daughter Celeste, who fronts the band herself, and an incredible legacy of creative sound and revolutionary politics. In tribute to a godmother of the Riot Girl movement and a true punk icon, this is Zach McCormick for Culture Q.
Well, that's our show. This week's stories were brought to you by Todd Grady, Christetta Borini, Brianna Hansen, Marquita Fornoff, Monica Castleman, and Zach McCormick. Producers for Culture Q are Eric Dolsky, Joe Kral, and Mark Sheely. Our culture coach is Sarah Lemanchek. Host and managing editor is me, Christetta Borini. If you missed something fascinating, you can always find Culture Q online at RadioK.org. Thanks for listening. What kind of car wheels do I have to pull? What kind of jokes should I lay out of now? I'm inclined to go finish high school just to make a notice that I'm around. Such a jerk, I'm afraid to even open my eyes, because I really don't want her to judge me, I want her to really know who I am, and then and only then will she love me, well at least that was the plan, if ever a boy needed a holiday, if ever a girl needed someone to hold, just hope I don't act the same way by the time that I get that old.
Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.